Mr. Baker, Real 8. With the large number of casualties your battalion suffered whilst you were at Gallipoli, did the battalion's morale start to slip a bit? People become a little bit depressed.
Well, one could never really pin it down that it was happening, but I've no doubt that after a time, with no sign, you know, of any finish to the campaign, I can't think that men were too happy, but one couldn't observe anything at all. It always appeared the same, cheerful, as under the circumstances, and happy, you know, happy as they could be, and making the best of everything, you know, in true British fashion, like they used to years ago.
Were there any cases of self-inflicted wounds or suicides?
No, I never heard of one at all, not one, no. There might have been one or two, but I never heard of any, no.
What was the general opinion of the Turks that you were fighting? Was there a hatred for them, or was it an affectionate relationship?
No, the relationship really was that they were good fighters, and we couldn't take them lightly. We knew that, and we knew that anything that we did would be met with tremendous resistance. Oh, yes.
Did you have any nicknames for them?
Johnny Turk, that's what we called them. Johnny Turk. Why Johnny, I don't know. No. And rarely did you see any of them. Not down at Helly's. No. You occasionally saw their heads above the trenches. But I never saw one full length, never, in the second time I was there. No. Down at Helly's, I never saw a Turk out of his trench. It was static down there.
Now, eventually, in October, you fell ill. Could you describe what your symptoms were?
Yes, I developed a terrifically high temperature, and also I had trouble with my spine. It was like rheumatism, and I went to the sick bay, and they said I'd got malaria, and they shipped me down to the beach, and put me on a small boat and took me out to a hospital ship. And
what did you feel when you left Gallipoli? Were you happy to be going?
I was very happy to leave. Let's face it, I was happy to leave. I'd had enough. You know, after a time, it begins to wear on one, you know. And I can't say that I was a real hero, no. I was happy to leave. And to get in a bed and have sheets, and after lying on the hard ground for weeks, it was heaven. But I didn't feel very good, so I couldn't enjoy it too much. But it was nice to have cold water, and without being chlorinated. Yes.
Can you remember the name of the hospital ship you were taken on?
No, I can't. No, that's one of the things I can't remember.
You sound as if you were treated very well aboard the hospital ship.
Hmm?
It sounds as if you were treated well, in contrast to your experiences on the Dongola.
Yes, on the hospital ship they treated us really well. You see, they'd got nurses there, and we hadn't seen women for a long time. No.
Had you missed not seeing women at all? Had you missed not seeing women at all while you're on Gallipoli?
No, not really. No. You knew you were in with men only, and that was it. You made the best of it. Yes. We went down to Malta, and I was put in the naval hospital, Boogie, they called it, and treatment there was wonderful. And I ran a very high temperature there, and 103 and 104, and then they examined me with x-rays, my spine, and made next to no progress. They then strapped me to the top of the bed with straps under my shoulders and put weights on my feet and on pulleys over the end of the bed. And Lord knows what that was supposed to do, but I was x-rayed no end of times, and they didn't find anything out at all. Finally, they decided to send me back to England and put me on a small steamer and went back to Mudros. That was crazy, I thought. All that way back from Malta to Mudros, and there got on the Aquitania, which was a hospital ship. And of course, she soon came down a few hundred miles again past Malta and went home. And the old Aquitania, of course, was one of the biggest ships afloat in those days. And the treatment on that was really good. But there again, I had no end of doctors examine me, and none of them could make out what was wrong. And my temperature was beginning to go down a bit then. And when we got back to England, that was December the 4th, a foggy day I remember. And I was sent along to Hasler, the naval hospital, and I was in there and had lots of examinations there by various men. And on December the 24th, the day before Christmas, the Surgeon General of the Royal Navy examined me, the highest man in the Navy, and he decided that I was no more good for the services. So on that occasion, he said, you will be discharged. That was the 24th of December, 1915. And on the 1st of January, 1916, they sent me home.
Were you in a lot of pain? Could you walk or...
No, I was locked up, more or less, you know. Couldn't bend, because I'd shaken off my malaria at Malta. And but this was an entirely different thing. It was a spine.
Do you know what had caused it?
They didn't know, and they never did know. They put a query on my discharge papers as to what they thought it was. But... they gave me a full pension, a ticket which said totally disabled, and my total disabled pension was £1 a week. Yeah, that was my total disablement pension. Well, after a time, I gradually I walked around with sticks, and after a time, I began to be able to bend. And after about 2 years, I wasn't too bad at all, really. No. I began to get going again. And in 1917, about April 1917, I got a job driving army transport. And I did that till the end of the war.
Was this a civilian job or was it?
Yes, that was civilian.
Was there any chance that you might rejoin the services, or were you still really too ill for that?
No. They'd given me the sack and that was it. Yes.
You didn't want to go back to the army anyway?
Oh, no. I was quite happy doing the transport job.
What did the transport job consist of?
Rations. Carrying the rations up at Halton Camp. For the Army Canteen Committee, they called it then, which is the NAFI nowadays.
What exactly would you do on a typical day?
Well, used to take rations up to the various quarters, you know, and also to the canteens. That was my general work. Quite an easy job, really, and I found that I could begin to lift stuff again. Oh, yes. And then came the end of the war, and I had the sack. The end of the war. Then I was married on January the 18th, 1919, and I had the sack the next week, and my job finished. I'd only been married a week and had the sack. And that was that.
Do you remember anything special about Armistice Day? Were there any special celebrations?
Well, yes, I can remember that very clearly. November the 11th, 1918. It was a very, very foggy, miserable day. You know, a typical November day. And there was great, you know, elation, really, when they heard that the war was over. 11 o'clock on the 11th day of the 11th. The 11th hour of the 11th month. That was it. 11th day. It was all 11s. But it was a costly business for my friend who joined up with me in 1914. He went right through the war till the last day. And he was in the Naval Division in France and with the Royal Marine Battalion there. And he knew the night before the war was finishing at the 11 o'clock the next day. And he said the Germans kept up a very heavy shelling all the time. And he had his right leg cut off below the knee at 6 o'clock in the morning on the last day. And he'd been right through the war, right through Gallipoli. And he'd also served on 3 ships. And he'd been torpedoed 3 times, and he got out of those troubles. Then they finally put him in the battalion in France, and that was the end of him. And also, he survived Zeebrugge. He volunteered for that and got out of that. So you can see that he did some real soldiering. But his luck failed him on the last day.
Did you have any special celebrations yourself?
Nothing very, very lively, really, because, you see, we hadn't got anything much to celebrate with in those days. Very short of food, you know. And we were just happy about it, that was all, that it was all over. There was a certain amount of sadness as well as happiness, because, you see, you'd lost so many friends. 7 of my footballers in my team were killed. 7 out of the 11.
How, you say you were dismissed shortly after your marriage from the job, you know. How did you set yourself up in work? What was your next job, or did you spend a period on the dole?
After the war, yes. I then had another job driving the managing director of the building firm who built East Camp at Halton. And I drove him for a year. And then that job finished. And I got a job looking after engines up at Bulbeck Barracks. And so they'd got quite a lot of equipment up there, you know, with engines, and I looked after that. Quite an easy job.
So you managed to find employment fairly easily?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, you see, not everybody knew much about engines in those days. I mean, my father, he was an engineer, and he taught me quite a bit. My father was the first man to have a licence in Aston Clinton.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Baker.
Well, that's it, yes. Do you think that'll be useful?
Yes, very useful, thank
Good,
you.
Good, yes.